Attention, everyone. Attention. We're on the air. So, Sarah, what's been going on these days?
So many things.
I think it's great. There's always fun stuff in the news. And if we just talked about nothing but the most recent news items, we would probably have plenty of stuff to visit about. Like, what do you think of this deal with one of our heroes growing up, the Bill Cosby situation?
Oh, that's heartbreaking to me. I can't even tell you the hours that I laid on the floor in front of the speaker of our stereo listening to his records and laughing myself silly with my brother Joe Firecrow.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm telling you, he was my favorite. And so this is like heartbreaking and makes me angry. I mean, a predator is a predator, and I'm the first one to call him out, but it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I consider Bill Cosby one of my heroes. When I was a kid growing up, he was one of the only stand-up comedians that you could listen to with your parents around because he didn't swear.
Yeah, he was clean and he was hilarious. Yeah. And, you know, his stuff was relevant. I mean, as a kid, him talking about being a kid and me as a kid listening, I could totally relate with everything he was saying.
Yeah.
You know, fighting with his brother and his parents getting on him and getting angry. And I just, everything. We all lived it.
Yeah. Yeah, I had, you know, like everyone, I had my favorite of his gigs. One of my favorites was when he and his friends went to the carnival and would put soap chips in their pockets so that they could get in line first. And they'd put those soap chips in their mouth and their mouth would be, you know, have this foam coming out. Mm-hmm. And they'd walk up to the front of the line, "You're going to die." and the people would clear out and they'd get first in line and get right on the rides. And, you know, stuff like that's hilarious. And so naturally, to see one of my heroes fall off his pedestal,
have
I was
feet of
sad
clay.
About that.
Yeah, the feet of clay. It's never fun to find out someone that you admire is really a pervert.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good way to put it. It's people who get involved in stuff like that. They need to pay the price.
They sure do.
So we've been talking recently about the thing that I think everybody at one point or another in their life has to deal with, and that is the diet issues.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, being over 50, it's a constant struggle just not to turn into a mountain, you know, massively overweight. It's difficult. It's difficult. Some people struggle with it all their life. Some people don't. Some people just need to lose a few pounds now and then, and other people have to constantly struggle.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you can make yourself a bore if that's all you ever talk about, but sometimes it's all you can think about if you're not feeling well.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you have an occasion to go to and you don't want to be humiliated.
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up in a home where there were a few people who had to watch their weight. I was not one of them. You know, I was the skinny kid and I could eat and eat.
Oh, quit bragging.
And it didn't matter.
Quit bragging.
It did not matter what it was I ate. I didn't have any trouble with weight, and I was lucky. But that all changed when I was about 30 or 31 years old. Suddenly, and it was almost like overnight, I went from the skinny guy to the guy who really had to watch what he ate. And it was a complete paradigm shift for me.
Well, you know, I grew up in a home with a mother who'd graduated from BYU in foods and nutrition.
Oh, great.
And a father who is a physician, and they wanted us to eat healthy.
Right.
That didn't mean we didn't get treats. But I remember when my mom made the shift from being a really great cook to a good, healthy cook.
Yeah.
And her food was still good. It's still good to this day, and she's 90. And, you know, there's something to be said for eating healthy. She's 90, and she's chipper, and, you know, everything's fine. But what I'm saying is, as a kid, going from, you know, really delicious food and having it go to, Mom, why are these cookies not sweet? You know, yeah. Oh, well, I left 3/4 of the sugar out. Right. Oh, well, why did you do that? What was the point of
there
that?
There aren't cookies anymore.
Yeah, these aren't cookies. Yeah, and then I think it was really interesting looking back on my life and realizing that I have an addiction to sweet carbs.
Right.
And noticing that I've had a problem with them. I think I probably realized it one day when I recalled being about 4 years old.
Yeah.
And I went in the freezer out in the garage, and someone, it couldn't have been my mother, someone had put a box of Ding Dongs in the freezer.
Wow.
And we never had food like that at our house, no. Ever. And I ate one. I took one and I ran and hid and ate it. I knew better than to let anybody see me. And I went back and got another one. I probably had 4 or 5 and my brother caught me and he made me show him where they were and then he ate the rest. So I'm, as a 4-year-old being able to put away 5 Ding Dongs, I think that shows that there's a sugar thing going on in Sarah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's it seems like that's when we get started. We at some point in our early life, we get introduced to sugar, and then from then on, it's just a downhill journey.
Well, you know, being in this home where we rarely had treats around, if they were there, this is the other thing. It's the scarcity idea, you know, as, oh, Mom made a pie.
Yeah.
How many people were at the dinner table that night? You know, 10, 12, yeah. 13?
And biggest question is, am I going to get a piece of that
pie? Am I going to get a piece of that pie? And the honest truth was, if you were full and you couldn't stuff another bite of potatoes in your body, when the pie came out, you ate it or you didn't get any.
Yeah.
Because it was gone. If there was ice cream in the freezer and we were having it for dinner, you had your scoop or it was gone. It didn't matter whether you were hungry or not.
Yeah, that's exactly how it was in our house, too. And, you know, I think money was a little more scarce in those days, I think, for most people. And so having treats around was kind of a big deal. I know it was in our house. It seems like treats like anything sugary, cakes, pies, candy, even sugar cereal. My mom refused to buy sugared cereal.
Well, that was the devil's spawn, you know, in my mother's eye.
Yeah.
This was my mom's big thing when we'd say, hey, Mom, can we get some Wonder Bread? Because that seemed really cool to us. You know, heaven forbid we eat her delicious homemade bread. We wanted some Wonder Bread. And this was what she'd always say. That has no food value.
Food value. What is food value, Mom? Food value. If I can eat it and it tastes good, it must have value.
Well, you know, and I feel sorry for kids who grow up being fed a steady diet of junk.
Yeah.
I do. But also that whole idea of scarcity was drummed into me probably unwittingly. I don't think that's what my parents meant at all.
Right.
But it happened. And so once I started having my own money to spend and once I had the freedom, it was very hard not to spend it on junk.
Yeah.
You know, like my freshman year of college, I lived on French bread and Baby Ruth bars.
Yeah, sounds like a reasonable diet.
Yeah. Chocolate ice cream.
What kind of drinks did you have?
Oh, I never was into pop, really. I drank water.
Right.
I've pretty much always been a water drinker.
Well, you know, you have to have that water to wash down the French bread.
Well, in those days at BYU, I lived the store closest to me to shop at was Albertsons.
Right.
And at Albertsons, you could get 2 huge, freshly baked loaves of French bread for $1.
Oh, wow. Those were the days.
And I was a broke college student. I was paying my own way. Nobody was sending me any money. I didn't have a food meal ticket. You know how kids had the meal ticket and they could go down to the Morris Center and they could fill up on whatever they were serving that day. I didn't have that. And I was paying my own way. And so $1 for 2 loaves of bread, man, that'd keep me going for a couple days.
Yeah, Merlin Guth and I roomed together my it was both of our, actually it was my second semester, Merlin's first semester. But anyway, we had tickets to the Cannon Center, mm-hmm. which was aptly named the Cancer Center. And, but you know, it didn't matter. The food was average, but there was a lot of it. And so we loved it. It was good. Plus there was always pies and cookies and cake, you know, for dessert. But, you know, thinking about that, and we were talking about Bill Cosby, one of his favorite gigs was to talk about, you know, feeding cake to his kids in the morning, and his wife came down and saw, and he broke
Dad
it down.
Dad is great. Yeah. Makes exactly. It feeds us chocolate cake.
It's got eggs. It's got flour.
Wheat.
It's got all the, yeah, it has all of the basic nutritional qualities that you would expect in a breakfast.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's good stuff. So we were talking about dieting. I remember my first experience with that was a point where I just decided I needed to lose weight. I was packing around a lot of extra weight. And I found what worked for me, and about the only thing that worked for me, was to cut out carbs. Because I was a carb junkie. I ate a lot of hamburgers and potato chips and anything else I could find that was really good. And so what worked for me was to have a breakfast of little or no carbs, have a few carbs at lunch, and then little or no carbs for supper. And I lost weight very quickly with that and got down to what I considered my ideal weight.
Well, and you guys, I have to tell you, it's going to make you mad, ladies, but Jeff's low carb is like super high carb for Sarah. He'd say, Sarah, I'm having low carb today. And I'm like, really? I did not know that three pieces of toast was low carb. Okay.
Well, it had really, healthy honey on it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the point to make about this was that he changed the carbs that he ate, and they were extremely healthy, and he only really ate them once a day, and the rest of the time was fairly low. And so, yeah, you had some carbs, but they were healthy ones that your body could use.
You know, and I think another thing that helped was the fact that during those days, I was working a night shift, and the only way to stay awake at night when you're working is to just eat like a crazy person. And you can't eat good stuff, of course. I didn't have any broccoli in the middle of the night. But it was all stuff like, you know, candy and potato chips, because it's easy and quick.
Yeah.
And good.
Well, you know, unfortunately for me, the whole dieting idea started when I was way too young. Yeah. And I didn't realize that I needed to until my mother said, you have a big butt. Well, she didn't say it that way, but that was that was what she was telling me.
Yeah, what were you, 100 pounds back in those days?
I was 105.
Yeah.
and I was introduced to the world of the crazy 70s diets, you know, like liquid diets and stuff like that. And I tried different things, and it just, now it just really bothers me that I even had to think about that or worry about it as a kid, because it was fruitless and stupid, and it messed with my body, and it made it so that I could easily gain weight. And I don't think that I ever really felt comfortable with how I looked my whole life, because I was always worried that I needed to lose a few pounds.
Yeah. And I think that's an important point to make. One of the things, and I think it's a difficult thing for women, especially because you stare at every magazine, every women's magazine, everything that has anything to do with beauty shows kind of the ideal. And so you have that to
the airbrushed and photoshopped ideal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and that wasn't even as much of a problem to me as just of the feeling I had inside of I don't weigh what I should, and then looking in the mirror, and even when I looked fine, seeing that I looked too heavy or something when I really didn't. And it's taken a lot of years to understand that. And I did a lot of things to my body that weren't good, like overworking it, working out really hard, really hard, really hard, day after day, pounding. And
we're talking about gym exercise.
Yeah, and
what
you
did
know,
you do? Free weights?
Or I did weights. I did step aerobics. I did running. I did just a lot of different things. And I always worked myself extremely hard, and I ended up with injuries. And that's when the problems really, really showed up. Because before then, you know, yes, you have a baby and you have some weight to lose, and you start to cut back on, you know, bad food, and you start exercising harder, and it starts coming off. And then, you know, and I don't know as a woman I was ever satisfied, but I looked fine, and nobody would have said, oh, she's needing to lose weight.
Yeah.
But when the injuries started piling up, that's when everything turned.
Yeah.
And I started to really pile on weight. And it was really frustrating for me because what I had done in the past did not work anymore.
How do you diet?
Well, it's interesting. It's evolved over the years because nothing's been successful and I haven't been able to figure out. I've always successfully lost weight, but I haven't successfully kept it off.
Right.
And so...
And isn't that the kind of the problem with dieting?
Yes, and that is. And so I have read and I've read a lot of stuff, science, and why does my body do this and what can I do for it to behave the way I want it to. And I've learned a lot. In about 2014, I went to BYU Women's Conference and I heard a talk that changed my life. And I started really making it a spiritual matter of how to become healthier. And it wasn't about how I looked so much anymore as how I felt and what I was able to do with my body. And as a lot of you know, as we get older and if we have excess weight, it hurts our joints, it hurts our bodies, we can't do the things we want to do. And I had just become a grandparent, and I just really felt like I wanted to be able to be the kind of grandma that I wanted to be.
Like the fun grandma who did activities.
Not the grandma in pain that's sitting on the couch.
Right.
Which is kind of what I've experienced a lot of. And so I kind of found my way into how to have the strength to take off the 100 pounds I needed to take off at that time. And I was able to over through inspiration and study and all that. But I still, after all that, did not know how to maintain that.
And
as hard as I tried. And then stressful things happened in my life. I was in premenopause and went into, you know, sorry people, but menopause is a real thing. And then started going through it full blown and had a sick grandchild and traveled a lot to help and found myself right back where I was before. And I thought, what are the tools that I need to conquer this?
And so you went through kind of a phase of, I think initially you went on a version of the low carb diet, where you cut out most of your carbs. But recently, this intermittent fasting phase has kind of taken hold amongst the dieting community. And isn't that something you're using now? You combine that with the low-carb diet?
Right, yes. But, you know, go back a little ways. In the 70s, fasting got really popular, but it was more like a long-term fast,
right.
You know. Maybe 3 to 10 days and stuff like that. And I read a lot of fasting books back then, and I understood the power of the fast in healing. But I can't fast. I mean, you know, in our religion, as you know, we fast once a month.
LDS.
Yes, we fast once a month on Fast Sunday. First Sunday of every month is Fast Sunday. And as a child, that was torture. It was torture. Our mother enforced it. You know, it was like, you will fast. And it wasn't a choice thing. And so, you know, thankfully, we had a storage room with food in it.
Yeah.
And we'd sneak out there or sneak out to the garden and eat peas, you know, just to try to survive. And we'd just be dying, you know, laying there thinking that we were in the last stages of death. And,
yeah.
And, before dinner, you know, and mom would be like, it hasn't been 24 hours yet, you know.
Oh, yeah, the stopwatch is going.
Yeah, and so I was brought up, you know, understanding that that about religious fasting. And when I got older and learned about it, I thought, well, I want to do this. This is a really good thing to do as far as for religious purposes. And yet I still found it almost impossible. And so when intermittent fasting came along, the first iteration I heard of it was an every other day thing. You fast one day and then you don't the next and you fast. And I couldn't stick with that for any amount of time. Right. It was very difficult. And so I just let that go by the wayside. But then I started hearing about intermittent fasting a few years ago, and I kind of took a stab at it a few times, but I didn't understand it. And then, you know, thankfully for YouTube, you can learn anything. And I went and learned a lot of different things and started combining it with low carb. And that's what I did the first round. And I was pretty successful last fall with it. I did it for a while, and then I went out of town, and I just kind of let it fall by the wayside again. And then I picked it up again, but I had read a new book and about intermittent fasting, and it wasn't so strict on the food as much as the fast.
Right.
During the 16 to 20 hours that you fasted, you were only supposed to clean fast, which means just have water or black coffee. And I don't drink coffee, so it was water. And so I started that, and I didn't find success in that because I was basically eating what I wanted in my window. And then when that was closed and it was the fasting time, I found it really hard to fast.
Yeah.
And so I kind of finally, I came across a really great video, and it talked about our, and I don't want to get too technical here, but I learned something that in all of my reading, and I've read a lot of books and listened to a lot of doctors on videos, and I'd never come across this, and maybe it was said, but I didn't get it. But I came across this video by Butterbob Briggs about your fasting insulin, which is how high is your insulin before you eat?
You're right.
And a normal person's maybe down like 5 or 6. And then when anyone eats, that insulin raises about 6 times, 7 times. So let's say if you're normal and yours is at 5, and after you eat, your insulin is at probably 35.
Yeah.
And that would be normal. And then it would go back down. And if anybody knows about insulin, it's what makes you fat. But it also does good things for you. But so I'm trying to make this short. But what I learned from that is that my fasting insulin is extremely high. So let's say my fasting insulin is 35 or 40. Or 50.
So when I eat
and it goes up 7 times higher than that, so that means that it's never down. It means that I can't ever have it down in the normal range,
yeah.
No matter. And so then I learned that the only way to fix that is through fasting.
Yeah,
that will reset that. And you know, if you want to know more about it, you know, go look up the videos. But it's really interesting because it was an aha moment. You know, we've talked about aha moments ever since, I think maybe Oprah, you know, coined that phrase. This is an aha moment. And for me, it was like, aha, this is why I've never been able to maintain weight loss.
Right.
It's my fasting insulin is too high.
So if you were suggesting to somebody to research this for themselves, would you suggest that they just like go on a Google search and look for intermittent fasting related to
insulin? Well, you're going
to
find everything because there's people who hate it. You know, okay, first of all, I just want to say no one makes any money when you fast.
Right.
So you're going to find a lot of stuff against it. But what I want to tell you, it is the most peaceful and it's just easy way for me. And I fast probably 18 to 21 hours a day, and then I have a window of eating.
Right.
And I switched that eating back to low carb. And now I don't do keto. A lot of people do keto, but I find that low carb works just fine without doing keto. Keto's a little too high in the fat and low in the protein for
keto's
me.
Keto's like a diet plan.
Keto's a diet plan that's low carb as well, but it's your highest calories come from fat.
Okay.
And so anyway, I have found that combining intermittent fasting with low carb has brought me a peace and healing that I haven't experienced with anything else. I have less arthritis pain, and I have less crazy food thoughts, you know?
Yeah, and those are all real things. Yeah. I think that people who suffer with one form of an eating disorder or another will recognize these types of things in themselves.
Right. And one thing you need to be careful of is who you talk to about what you do, because you're going to have some super fit, athlete come and tell you what you're doing is wrong and that this is what the only thing that works and you need to do what they do. And they have no idea what your life is, what you've dealt with, what you've tried, what you've read. I've done the whole athlete thing.
Or how your metabolism works.
And they don't have any idea of the pain you're in. They don't have any idea of how much you've pounded your body to death when you were their age. And so be careful who you talk to about what you do.
So it's fair to say that dieting is not a one-size-fits-all. It's
absolutely not.
You have to find what works best for you and then stick with that.
Yeah, and I'm not telling anybody to do low carb, because you can if you want, but there are many ways to get to health that are tried and true.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't work for everyone. I've known people that have had a really bad time when they try to eat low carb. And so when they switch to something different, they feel much better and they're more successful.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing, is it takes a search, but I honestly believe that prayer helps. I honestly believe that study helps. And I believe that we can be guided to what is right for us.